nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
George Hegel said, "We may affirm absolutely that nothing great in the world has ever been accomplished without passion." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are three guests who have passion. Our first two playmakers believe it takes one extra degree to take care of their clients, while our next playmaker delivers affordable online degrees for educators. With us today are two co-owners of a company whose primary focus is becoming the premier provider of office technology, while our next guest is the provost of an online school for teachers who love what they do. These great playmakers are Ken Copeland, Ken is president, and Scott Wiggins, he's executive vice president, both co-owners of ASI Business Solutions, and Chantel Landry. Chantel is provost and interim president of American College of Education, and we're going to be today's show with Chantel. Dr. Chantel Landry is the provost and interim president of American College of Education. She spent more than 20 years in education at both the classroom and administrative levels, working with elementary and gifted students, developing curriculum and content for Voyager Expanded Learning in Dallas, and serving as a curriculum development consultant for online schools. Founded in the digital age, American College of Education strives to improve upon education across the U.S. through online graduate degree programs and professional development programs for educators. Chantel accepted her first role at American College of Education as Assistant Provost for Program Development Coordination, has been provost and interim president of the college since August of 2013. Well, Chantel, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, you start out in Lafayette, Louisiana. So how did you move from Lafayette to becoming the interim president and provost of American College of Education? That's really all-encompassing, but how did you start out?
Well, it's been quite an interesting journey. So I taught for about 5 to 6 years in the classroom. I taught both in Louisiana and in Texas, so I was teaching in the Houston area. Elementary kids, so my background was a bachelor's degree in elementary ed, a master's degree in gifted education. And so we ended up taking a job in Houston primarily because I wanted to go back to school. So that was the whole premise of leaving Louisiana, is I wanted to go to school and I wanted to go to school someplace else. So we end up in Houston. My husband transfers with his company, and then lo and behold, I don't go back to school and I keep teaching. And we end up leaving Houston and coming to Dallas. And when we did so, I had the opportunity to do something different. It was in the middle of a school year. I thought there's more that I can do, but I don't know what I can do. And I ended up with a job at Voyager Expanded Learning. And at the time, they were working on K-12 curriculum, mostly digital curriculum.
And talk a little bit about that, because most people don't know what that is.
So Voyager Expanded Learning is a company that does K-12 curriculum. And at the time, we were really focused on low-income schools, schools that either weren't making it in terms of what they needed to do money-wise, or they simply didn't have the student ability that they needed. So what we did is we worked on intervention curriculum. So what can we do? We'd go into districts and say, give us your 10 lowest schools, and then let us put our curriculum in place and see the difference. And our whole mission there was about making sure all kids could read at grade level by third grade. You know, we all know the stats about if you're reading by on grade level by third grade, there's a much more likely chance that you're not going to end up in prison. However,
really?
If you're not reading on grade level, there's a much higher chance you will end up in prison. So third grade and reading ability is a pretty critical period. So that was our main focus. While we did other stuff, that was really what we focused on. So while there, I spent quite a bit of time learning how to not only develop curriculum, how to really emphasize research. So our curriculum was all based on what is the latest and greatest research. How do we help teachers really move this needle? Went back to school, decided I wanted both an MBA and a doctorate.
Was this at TCU?
I did it at TCU, yes. They're one of, at the time, they were one of only three in the country that had a joint MBA doctorate in education, which was exactly what I was looking for. I felt like I had the curriculum background I needed, but I wanted the business sense, so it was a really good combination. I left there to actually spend some time at Southern Methodist University. They had received a grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to look at national and international math standards. And the School of Engineering received the grant. So they needed an educator to come in and deal with it. And it was a great opportunity for me. I was looking for a dissertation project, so it worked out really well. Spent 2 years there with the Lyell School of Engineering working on that grant. And when the grant was completed, it was about the same time I was finishing up my dissertation, and I ended up at American College of Education. I knew several of the leaders there, and I was talking to them about what I was interested in, and we just felt like it was a really good fit. So I came in with the intention of, let's get curriculum and assessment where it needs to be, and let's take everything we knew was right in terms of what we did at Voyager and apply it now to higher ed. So let's take what we know is good about K-12 and think about how do we make it also good in higher ed. So that's really how I ended up at American College of Education. And it's a series of taking opportunities when they arise. So being willing to sort of step out of your comfort zone and say, I've never done this before, so let me do something new and figure it out.
Well, this is interesting. I'm going to talk more about the American College of Education because the school is about 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit different because it's online. And this gives educators a chance to develop their education. So talk a little bit about why the school was developed and what educators are actually getting out of it.
It was founded by a group of concerned educators. Some were from the K-12 sector. Some were just concerned businessmen. But their intent was to be able to provide affordable degrees to teachers. Because a teacher's salary, even if they get a master's degree, they typically will not make back in salary what they've spent to get their master's degree. And yet, if we don't provide more education to the teaching community, how do we have an impact on K-12? So it was really founded in those principles. How do we provide affordable, high-quality education to teachers? And when I first entered American College of Education, one of my first questions was, why don't we require entrance testing? While we have admission standards and we have all those typical things, we don't require teachers to take a test. And I had some concerns about that. I was coming from a highly selective program where you had to test to get in. And the president at the time said something that I will never forget. She said, these people are teachers. They're going to be in the classroom whether they get a degree or they don't get a degree. They're staying in this classroom. Isn't it our obligation to provide affordable, high-quality programming for them rather than keep them out? Isn't our job to provide access? And that's exactly what we're about at American College of Education. It's about how do we provide high quality and affordability, because that's really the vision that we have set for the entire college. How do we show the whole country, how do we break that perceived link between quality of programming and cost? Because the industry tends to think higher cost means higher quality, and that's not always the case.
One of the things I read from the information I received about you was the fact that this gives educators the chance to receive advanced degrees and not have to incur a tremendous amount of debt to receive those degrees. So how does that happen, and how does online education differ from classroom education?
Well, what we have been able to do is we've taken what you can do in an online environment, and it both helps what we do as employers and what we do for teachers. So internally, we're all about efficiency. We are always talking about the efficiency of a dollar. Does that bring an impact to students? Does it impact their education? There is no endowment sitting on the sidelines, and there is no federal money that's supplying our revenue. Everything comes from tuition. So we have to make sure that we're using technology to both make us more efficient, but then make the degree itself more efficient for students. And in that, it allows us to provide highly relevant programming, because students are not looking at textbooks that are 7 years old. They're getting the latest and greatest journal articles. They're looking at the latest and greatest research. And the way we design the curriculum is that students are assigned some particular type of research project. They go back into their situation, whether they're in a classroom or a district or a building, and they have to collect data, analyze the data, then do something with that data. And that is what's made the biggest impact in K-12, is that not only can we deliver the degree more efficiently because we use technology, we also are very relevant. It's almost that MBA mindset of what you're learning today, you're applying tomorrow. And that you'll see that in every program we do. If it's not relevant, it shouldn't be done.
Speaking with Dr. Chantel Landry, she is the Interim President Provost for American College of Education, and the website is aceace.edu to find out more about this. Does this give the educators that are going to school a chance to do more because they're not in a classroom situation? It's a different way to learn rather than sitting in a class.
Yes, it is a different way to learn. However, The way we set our courses up is students also, they receive lectures just as if they would be in a traditional setting. They have discussion board posts where they're engaging in conversation both with their professors and their fellow students. And what's different about it, and what many of our students really like, is that they're receiving perspectives from across the country and frankly, across the world, because we have a good portion of international students. So teachers will post, I'm having this particular trouble, or I'm in this particular unit, and they're getting insights from across the country. And one of our grads, I think, said it best when she said, I'm not learning from the professors that have chosen to live in my hometown. I'm learning from the experts across the country. And that, I think, is an absolute benefit to our students, and why I think online can be incredibly powerful. Because all we have to do is gather a lecture from someone who's an expert and put it in a course, and students have access to it. And that just doesn't happen all the time if you're in a traditional bricks and mortar. In addition, our students, our average age is 37. So our students are typically working mothers more than anything else. We're highly female. And they're signing on for their third shift. So they're doing education at 9 o'clock when the kids have been tucked in. So it fits in their schedule.
This is interesting because you live here in Dallas. The school is in Indiana, I believe. And people from virtually all over the world can attend American College of Education.
Absolutely. We have students from 46 countries and 46 states and 22 countries.
So should there be a listener that either is an educator or knows somebody and is an educator, where would they go to get the information about the school?
The best place is just our website. If you go to our website, they will be contacted by an enrollment counselor who can then walk them through what's available in their state, what might work for their particular type of licensing in their state. So enrollment counselors really help them from an advisory capacity to figure out if the degree is right for them and what degree might actually work.
Well, Chantal, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. Interesting way for educators now to learn. Thank you very much for being here. And tell everybody one more time what that website is.
It's www.ace.edu.
Dr. Chantal Landry, the interim president and provost for American College of Education, thank you very much for being here. Don't go away. We have more in store. We're going to talk about technology with two gentlemen from a company called ASI Business Solutions. We'll talk to Ken Copeland and Scott Wiggins when we come back right after this.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Their names are Vivian, Bryce, Zoe, and Joshua, ages 5 to 12. They are part of a very exclusive club that neither they nor their families want to belong. They've all been diagnosed with some form of pediatric cancer. Each year in DFW, hundreds of families hear the dreaded words, "Your child has cancer." Wipe Out Kids Cancer helps families cope and support researchers looking for a cure. Our mission is simple, to work relentlessly for the day when all children are living cancer-free. Learn more at wokc.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show, in for an interesting segment with two co-owners of a company. Founded in 1989, ASI Business Solutions provides DFW companies with hardware and software for managed print services, managed network services, mailing solutions, document management, and workflow. Now, Ken Copeland brings more than 25 years of industry experience to his role as president and co-owner of the company. His primary focus is building ASI into the premier provider of office technology in the region, placing a high priority on customer service and satisfaction. Scott Wiggins also brings more than 25 years of industry experience to ASI in his role as executive vice president and co-owner. He's responsible for administration, finance, purchasing, leasing, sales support, and business planning. Now, ASI is a privately owned business whose sole focus is delivering strategies for better office technology. ASI recognizes that when your technology operates in alignment with your business objectives, you're better positioned to achieve your goals. And we're going to be talking about that this afternoon. And Ken and Scott, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Good morning, Steve.
Thank you.
Well, I want to talk about the beginning of ASI Business Solutions. Ken, you started in 1989. You started with an $8,000 loan, executive suite, refurbishing Xerox equipment. And Scott, then later you became a minority shareholder. But let's start with Ken. Tell us about the early days.
Well, the early days were really surrounding analog technology. And because that technology really didn't move forward, you know, as quickly as today's digital world, there was a real opportunity to go back and rebuild equipment and take it back to the marketplace. And so I spotted an opportunity in the Xerox equipment, the very high-end production products, and it so happened that I actually was buying the equipment from Scott. We both worked at Lanier, and we left about the same time. And Scott managed the largest portfolio of third-party finance Xerox equipment. And so I had probably one of the best opportunities to go cherry pick equipment and refurbish it and take it back to the marketplace. And along that way, Scott, I think he realized that what was taking place was a pretty good opportunity. So Scott came aboard, he bought in, and we've been partners for 25 years. And so it was just a wonderful opportunity. It allowed us to cash flow the business and get started in a way that, you know, today it's kind of on its way to a much faster path in the days of technology now, because digital really opened up a lot of opportunities, as you mentioned, with document workflow and the ability to connect to the network. So 25 years, that's a fast forward for 25 years, but yeah, it's been a good 25.
And we're going to talk more about where the industry has gone. And Scott, you two knew each other at Lanier.
We did.
And then you left. Went to Xerox?
We did. We worked for several years together in two different offices here in Dallas. And we left at the same time. Ken went to pursue work at a small leasing company, and I went to work for a large leasing company, GE Capital. And my role was really different than what it had been at Lanier. It was dealing with off-lease equipment, so there was an enormous portfolio of the Xerox equipment that Ken mentioned, in addition to phone switches, computers, the old XTs, ATs. I just learned a whole different world of pre-owned off-lease equipment. And when Ken and I talked about working together, we determined that there was a real value in my understanding of that used equipment and the wholesale market that existed out there to acquire this used equipment and then to resell that product to other dealers or international customers that wanted to buy that older technology. We would then take, you know, some of the really nice equipment, as Ken mentioned, rebuild that and resell that to our customers that were looking for quality product but didn't want to pay the sticker price of a brand new machine. And so with analog technology, there hadn't been a whole lot of changes, or there weren't a whole lot of changes in about a 10-year window between the late 80s and the mid-90s. And then, as Ken mentioned, technology began to change, and we transitioned with the digital age.
I think it's fascinating because you really don't sell equipment anymore. You're selling the service to the customer. Talk about how the business has changed as it went from analog to digital and how you interact with your customers.
Well, it's certainly become more of a consultative sale. And so, you know, as far as the interaction with the customer, it you know, was pretty much on price, because technology had not moved forward as it has today. And so with the way we consult or we approach our customers, we have a process called MDOM, and basically it's measure, design, optimize, and manage. And so through the measure phase of it, it's about getting to know your customer, right? And then the other part is collaborating with your customer to design a solution. Obviously, you optimize it by implementing it, and then managing it is to basically go back and make sure that they're getting what you'd promised them, right? And so it's a little different today, because we're talking software integration, technology, and things that really are more business process oriented. And so it's a little deeper, more intimate relationship with the customer, and then you have to service all of it, right?
Well, we're talking about the relationship with the customer, and you have something unique that you've done. Matter of fact, Scott told me when I was at your office a few months back, and you have this on the wall, too. There's two things that you have. You have your core values, and I believe you have, six or seven is the core values, but you also talk about how at 212 degrees, steam does something a little bit different. So, Scott, talk about that. Talk about how that was developed and how you use that with your clientele.
Well, we weren't the creators of it, but the 212 book is out there, and it was probably 10 years ago that we were trying to, after we'd been in business 15 years, we were trying to identify the type of culture we had and how we could take that and really shape it and create really a better culture as we grew our organization. And so we identified the 212 concept. And so at 211, water is hot. At 212, it boils. And with boiling water, you can create steam. And with steam, you can power an engine. You can power a train, a locomotive. And so it's that one extra degree that makes that difference. And so we took that concept, and whether that's, you know, working with our employees or working with a family member or a friend or customers, we're just trying to identify that one extra degree of difference, that one extra degree of effort that we can make to build a better relationship.
I'm going to talk to Ken about the core values, but we are speaking with Ken Copeland, who is president, and Scott Wiggins, who is executive vice president and co-owners of ASI Business Solutions. Their website is asibiz.com. You can check that out. They have some great videos, which sets them apart from other companies that do what they do. But Ken, what about the core values? And I believe you have about six core values.
We do. Culture is so important in an organization, and as you grow, you know, it was just very apparent to me that we needed something that was a common denominator that we all rallied around. Core values, trying to define a value statement, something really as part of your vision statement, if you will. And so it just allows a way for us to hire, for us to reward, for us to recruit. It's just a whole platform for us to build our business around and to execute every day surrounding these core values. So it's something I call culture by design. And again, that's just part of the design piece of that.
One of the things I work with my clients on is the fact that we attract to us that which we think about. Mm-hmm. The fact that you've put together these core values, you know what you want to attract to you, mm-hmm. and therefore you then attract those type of people to your business, and it kind of builds from that, and it's right. A built-in culture. But as people are listening, and I mentioned ASI Business Solutions, we mentioned copiers, that doesn't say what you do. Tell us what you actually do for your clients.
Well, again, I go back to the consultative sale piece of it, but they outsource to us, and that's what we call an MSP, a managed service provider. That's a very prevalent term in the managed network service business. And it's, I don't know if it's really a new term, but we've been doing it for 25 years, and people have outsourced their service for us to really select the products and then maintain those for them. And we do all of that, but we want to be the trusted advisor. And that's just such a big component of the value I think our clients see in us, is being able to trust us and being able to, you know, just make sure that we deliver products and technology that make them more efficient and productive.
So you're still selling the actual tangible, the unit itself.
Correct.
To clients, right. In many cases, but you have other services. So, Scott, talk about some of those services you offer, mailing solutions, document management, et cetera.
Well, the longest-term business we've been in is multifunction printers, right? Copiers became digital, became connected to the network. They are printers. We then got involved in mailing systems and equipment back in about 2006. And then our newest offering over the last 5 years has become managed IT. And so being that trusted advisor, technology is moving at a very rapid pace. There's a lot of choices the customer has. And in the end, they have to determine from the IT perspective, do they want to handle this fast-paced changing technology in-house through some of their own people, which requires a lot of effort, requires the right person to have the right training. It's an enormous investment. Or do they want to outsource it to a company like ourselves that has a breadth and depth of talent to constantly keep up with all the changing factors and then be able to deliver the right solutions and option to the customer, along with proactive repair, proactive fix, and proactive planning to make sure that we understand the customer's business and we can see 1 year out, 2 years out, 3 years out with the customer to make sure that they're headed in the right way to be able to maximize the use of the technology.
Which saves them, as you mentioned, a lot of time and money, because you don't have to have the people on hand to do that. They have you to take care of that too. You've been in business for 25 years. I know, Ken, from an article I read in the Dallas Business Journal, you had a downturn a few years ago. You had to develop some ways to keep your business going. But what advice would you give other entrepreneurs out there, people that want to be in business? Should they want to be starting a business, or should they be in business right now?
Wow, that's a,
Both of you together, both Scott and Ken.
Yeah.
If they were going to start a business, what pitfalls are they going to have to understand they're going to have out there? What are they going to have to do to really develop their clientele that you do at ASI Business Solutions?
Well, I personally think it comes down to the people that you hire, the people that are a part of your business, because relationships are everything. And change is inevitable. You're going to have that. You're going to have to keep up with the marketplace. You're going to have to always be on the cutting edge of taking your business to that level that provides that, you know, added benefit to a customer. But if I had to give, you know, a recommendation to a business owner, I would just say that get out there into your best practice groups. Make sure that you're out there learning, and that you're also in some form teaching. I also would say that you need to surround yourself with great people. You have to have a great CFO. You've got to have great people in your organization, because you can't be all things as a business owner.
And the fact that you two have worked together probably helps tremendously. Having a partner and you two can lean on each other when something happens.
There's no doubt. Ken has a tremendously more talents or different talents than I have, and I think we've complemented each other over the years. I've certainly learned an awful lot from him being in partnership for 25 years, and hopefully there's a little bit of what I've had that he's been able to gain some insight from. You know, we've always said it's about relationships. It's about getting the right people in your organization. We've always said we want those people smarter than we are to help challenge us and take us to a higher level. And as Ken said, get out in the community, build some relationships, make sure you're well-funded, make sure you're ready to work hard, make sure you've got a backup plan. It's a dynamic and changing environment, and it's challenging, but people want good products, and they want good services, and they want options.
And what I just pulled from that is having the right kind of people, too.
Yeah, and one other little thing I've always said to people that are thinking about going into business is make sure that you're prepared to have half the revenue and twice the expense, and if you can survive that for a couple of years, you're probably going to make it.
Words to live by. We've been listening to Ken Copeland, who is president, Scott Wiggins, who is executive vice president, both co-owners of ASI Business Solutions. And gentlemen, where should anybody go to find out more about you on the internet?
www.asibiz.com. It's asibiz.com.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you,
Steve.
This has been a terrific show. Thank you all very much for joining us. It's been great having our guests on the show and having you listen. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com.